Welcome to Tower Talks with Inside Towers, the wireless infrastructure industry's podcast. And now for your weekly recap, a timely review of this week's top headlines and takeaways. Here's your host.
Welcome to Inside Towers Week in Review. I'm Leslie Stimson, Inside Towers Washington Bureau Chief. With me are John Celentano, our business editor, Sharp Smith, our technology editor, and Jim Fryer, our managing editor. This episode is sponsored by Inside Towers Intelligence, a quarterly market report that dives deep into the wireless infrastructure ecosystem. It looks at market trends, capital expenditures, relevant M&A transactions, and more. Intelligence is designed for managers, marketers, and investors. You can look for the 2023 Volume 2 issue in June. An annual subscription to Inside Towers Intelligence includes an exclusive briefing and online support. For more information or to subscribe, visit insidetowers.com/intelligence. Well, gentlemen, you had a big week at the big show for the Wireless Infrastructure Association. And I think, Jim, you're starting us off with the opening.
Yes, Leslie, we missed you being down there, but we had a really good contingent down there of me, Sharp, John from the editorial side, Megan Reed and Tony Lewis and Kara Aston from the marketing side. So we had a good presence and we were able to get out there and really network with a lot of the assembled audience from all over the industry and got some great feedback, not just as far as how everybody's been doing over the past year, but as far as the various issues that everybody's dealing with and the different dynamics that are going on in the industry, that's obviously what we are here to cover. So it was a great resource for us as far as going forward and getting more contacts, more information, and hopefully deepening our perspective on this industry. Patrick Halley, who by the way did a great job, the new CEO, president of WIA, he and his team did a fantastic job of putting all this together. I think all the sessions went very, very smoothly, and they were spot on and well attended, and seemed to be no real glitches that I saw. I think we all had a pretty good time there, and were well served by Pat and his staff, Patrick and his staff, and he. Patrick opened the entire show with some comments about his vision and WIA's vision of the industry. The theme of WIA this year was connectivity everywhere, and Halley said it's a bold vision, a vision that's achievable with everybody in this room working together. Vision that requires massive investment from industry and government, and a vision that requires the ingenuity and innovation from the best and brightest minds in the industry. And he said it's a vision that requires smart policy and provides a regulatory environment for the builders, operators, and innovators in that room that was assembled. So nice start to the proceedings. He got everybody kind of jazzed up about the job ahead, the year ahead. He cited some statistics, showed 99% of Americans have access to three or more 4G providers, and 315 million Americans are already connected to 5G, and with a rollout that was twice as fast as 4G. He said the wireless broadband networks in 2021 were 85 times faster than in 2010, and he expects that pace to continue. I said consumers are now experiencing 130 megabytes per second on average and several times faster than 4G, and in some cases, 1 to 2 gigabytes per second over their mobile broadband connection. he said to continue that advancement and the again, the connectivity everywhere theme. Halley said the industry needs to needs a national spectrum strategy that identifies a clear spectrum pipeline to power the next generation of wireless innovation. He said to do that, we need a well-trained workforce. That's the key. And pointing out that apprenticeships, training, and government partnerships are all part of that. And that will be the challenge going ahead. And that's something, obviously, that WIA is very involved in. And we're seeing that through a lot of other companies who are very, very intent on providing opportunities for the workforce going forward. So in closing, Halley said it takes a concentrated effort from a myriad of resources, and that the infrastructure builders and innovators, again, in that room, and probably about 1,000 or so people in the Great Hall there in New Orleans. But that was the crowd he was addressing, and that he said it takes the resources of that assembled group to deploy the infrastructure that the economy needs and society depends on. So all in all, it was a great, again, a great show and great opening remarks and effort by Patrick and his team. Had the gentlemen weigh in on what your impressions were of the event in general.
Well, Jim, there was a lot of talk at the show, and it's sort of like my first thought is, meanwhile, in the trenches, I was running into the smaller tower services companies who are laying off their tower crews, and I attended one session that had 5G past predictions, current realities, and future expectations, which had Jennifer Fritchie on it, and several others that were really good. And they started referring to the pause, and I've heard that things were being pulled back a little bit to normal CapEx, but the pause sounded a little more serious than just a pull back to normal CapEx. So I think the pull back to normal CapEx plus the vaulting of the interest rates have definitely sent some of the smaller companies into a state of limbo here in the first half of 2023. And a lot of people frustrated because we talk so much about the workforce shortage and their crews are driving for Uber right now because they don't have any work. So some interesting color as to what's actually going on at the tower site. What I wanted to talk about a little bit here, my main thing is I covered the View from the Top, which featured Jay Brown with Crown Castle, Steve Vondran with American Tower, Alex Gelman with Vertical Bridge, Jeff Stoops with SBA Communications, and it was moderated by Patrick Halley. Or Haley, we have to figure that one out. Haley, okay.
Halley like Valley.
Halley likes Halley, okay.
Like Valley, I asked them how to pronounce it.
Okay. It was a special view from the top If you've been covering the industry for a while, it was Jeff Stoops' last Connectivity Expo as president and CEO of SBA, and also we bid farewell to Alex Gellman as previously he was president and CEO, and now he's executive chairman and co-founder. Well, he's always become founder, but executive chairman of a Vertical Bridge, and more than likely Ronald Bizek, who's now president and CEO of Vertical Bridge, will be on the panel next year. So a lot of good feelings between these competitors. A lot of mutual respect. The general vibe from them was that this is just a natural cycle in terms of what happens when a new generation of technology is introduced. We had sort of a perfect storm last year of having all the carriers, Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, and now Dish Wireless were all working overtime trying to roll out their C-band, their mid-band spectrum. So it was a very, very healthy year, and so there was obviously going to be a pullback at some point when they hit their coverage goals, but I think the economy mixed in with that pullback to perhaps exacerbate a little bit, but on the whole, the panel was very upbeat. Crown Castle expects to install 10,000 small cells in 2023 with a capex of around $1.5 billion, and probably switching over to densification for a number of carriers. So that's certainly good news for small cell readers. Stoops said, basically referencing interest rates, he said he felt like the industry is pretty good at handling their capital structures and their debt, and he didn't see the interest rates really having an impact on the majors in terms of their operations. So obviously, when interest rates get higher, the industry is assets are worth less, which I guess if you're buying, that's and someone actually will sell to you, that's possibly a good thing. Fixed wireless networks, they got a lot of good press at the show. Brown said that he expects fixed wireless access to be the next big thing for several years, and that we've built out a lot of network infrastructure to provide that extra capacity to allow for the fixed wireless use, and when there's a crunch, they'll just fill in and densify and move on. So definitely good news there. Steve Bondran spoke a little bit about the delivering connectivity for the last mile, being this fixed wireless basically just being you know, the answer to that, you know, thing that we've been really talking about for years. And so he expects the industry to continue to fight for the government's broadband equity access and deployment, also known as BEAD money, to also include wireless as well as fiber. So yeah, on the whole, I'd say they're taking the big picture look, and the big picture looks really good. If you're a small company, your climbers may be driving for Uber for a while, but definitely most feel that the dip is a short-term thing.
I think, Sharp, we'd be remiss in our coverage of the event if we didn't mention the Vertical Bridge Verizon deal, which broke breaking news, as they always say on the news shows, broke while we were there. That seemed to cause quite a ripple with everybody. You're the one who covered that story for us. What was there?
The interesting thing about that, I think, is it really codified something or established something that we all kind of knew for a long time, is that you've got the three publics, and then you've got Vertical Bridge, and Vertical Bridge is by Ganzi's design, it has access to it's so big, it has this, the same it pays the same for capital as the public carriers companies do. So basically, you get the best of both worlds. You get a private company that can be flexible and meet the needs of their customers without answering to 1,000 screaming investors. But it also has the cost of capital of a public. Basically, the idea was, according to Ron Bissick, was, you know, they're big. They use the word permanent, and they're flexible, and so that's Verizon is definitely saying that's what they want. They don't obviously they could have given this. It's basically a build-to-suit agreement, which they already had with Vertical Bridge, but it's a build-to-suit joint venture where they Verizon gets a profits interest from the assets. So they could have gone to a public with that, but they didn't. They went to a private company that's as big as a public company, and someone that they know that Vertical Bridge will never be bought by Crown, American Tower. They won't be bought by one of the public companies. So I think it was it was just really interesting to see it unfold.
Very good.
Any ripples about that?
You know, those are the big picture issues that came out of the show. I was, you know, in a position to be able to drill down into some aspects of those. I participated on a few panels. The first one had dealt with, it was a workshop that was presented the first day, looking at CBRS neutral host models. And it was interesting that yesterday we came out with an article that Federated Wireless is promoting this notion of CBRS neutral host to private entities or government entities, where they're using the CBRS spectrum for applications that involve a third party to provide the service to some vertical application. The other thing, and you mentioned, you guys mentioned it, that fixed wireless access is sort of got a high profile at the moment. It's getting a lot of attention. T-Mobile is out in front. Verizon is following second. And then even U.S. Cellular is in the mix as well. I had a panel that posed the question, you know, is fixed wireless access, is it a short-term or is it a stopgap measure or a long-term solution? We had somebody from T-Mobile on the panel. We had somebody from U.S. Cellular on the panel. We also had a lady from Qualcomm, who Qualcomm provides the underlying chipset to make all of this happen. But I think the takeaway was, this is not a flash in the pan. This is a viable piece of the wireless business, and it's going to be around for a while, especially, and you both alluded to it, especially as we're going to see continued rollouts of new spectrum in C-band. Now that phase two clearance of the spectrum will be finished by the end of this year, we're going to see another 20 odd companies roll out whatever licenses they want in the auction. You know, AT&T and Verizon were the big winners, but you know, they were two of 21 companies that won C-band licenses. So those other guys really won't have a chance to activate those licenses until the rest of the spectrum is cleared by the satellite companies. And that'll happen starting at the end of the year and then roll into next year. So yes, we're in a bit of a dip this year in terms of CapEx from last year. And we knew about that. We knew that was coming. But, you know, out over the next several years, we're going to see a rollout of a new spectrum, both in C-band, 3.45 gigahertz. And T-Mobile is pushing to get clear the go-ahead to deploy the 2.5 gig licenses it bought in auction 110. It's waiting for the FCC to get spectrum authorization to approval to go ahead and a spectrum auction approval to go ahead and let T-Mobile deploy. But you know, the comments from both the T-Mobile rep and this U.S. Cellular rep that I had on the panel were very positive. They feel committed to that fixed wireless access is a significant component to their operation. And I want to make clear, and we did this at the outset of the discussion, that was that, you know, there's two versions of fixed wireless access. One is carrier-based, which is what we're talking about here, where the carrier allocates a portion of its spectrum on the mobile network for fixed wireless applications. The customer can get a box from the phone company, put it in the window at their home, and plug it in, and you're good to go. It's communicating over RF to the tower, but it's beaming Wi-Fi on the backside. So the other is facilities-based fixed wireless, where like the wireless internet service providers have, where they put in a base station and they have antennas at the customer premise that connect to a router inside the premise. So, you know, the wireless carriers are only doing this shared spectrum alternative. And because they're deploying so much spectrum and they plan to deploy additional spectrum in the mid-band in particular over the next few years, they see an opportunity to expand their fixed wireless offering. And, you know, the question came up, well, yeah, but if, you know, the mobile traffic starts to see congestion, we're going to start throttling the amount of spectrum that we're giving to the fixed folks. And, you know, the T-Mobile guy said, look, we engineer these sites, you know, so that, you know, we minimize that eventuality, and we have enough spectrum to do it. And we're going to be careful about where we offer it so that we can assure customers they're going to get the bandwidth they need when they need it. And he said, we're speccing them, you know, 100 megabits down and, you know, 20 megabits up, which is the objective that most of this is trying to reach. And he said, over the next few years, we could see several hundred megabits downloads. So that's an area that I think has gained traction. It's getting a lot of attention, and it's probably going to continue for some time. The other event I had the privilege of participating in was I got into a discussion with Dave Mayo at Dish, as he was the keynote presenter at a session on Wednesday. And so we had an opportunity to discuss some of the progress that DISH was making with its network deployment. The company had reported their first quarter 23 earnings in a call on Monday. And so I took the opportunity to ask Dave about, to recap what the company was talking about. They have a coverage bogey they have to meet in about a month. Actually, he said 40 days, but who's counting? Where they have to reach 70% of the population by June of 2023. And then the next bogey beyond that is 75% of the partial economic areas in the country by mid-2025. So he said they're on track. They're building, they'll have about 16,000 cell sites activated to meet that 70% mark. And they're working on another up to 18,000. And he said they're just going to continue to roll. He did acknowledge their spending probably will take a little bit of a dip, but he said they're not slowing down in their build out and will continue towards their 75% goal. He did say that he didn't commit to a time frame, but they do have they have big blocks of 3.45 and CBRS spectrum, and they have a new dual band radio coming out from one of their main suppliers, Samsung, that they will begin to deploy probably in 2024 and beyond. Although he didn't get specific about that, but if they can hang in there with appropriate funding. And he said, they're able to economize on their sites because they really deploy minimal equipment to make their sites work, three antennas, a couple of radios, a little bit of cable, and they're good to go, they're still on track to build out their network and under the $10 billion they budgeted a couple of years ago. And they are meeting their coverage requirements. So we didn't get into any other issues that the company is facing right now, but that certainly was an interesting discussion. I was pleased to be able to share the stage with him. And we got pretty good feedback on the discussion that Dave and I had while we were up there. But from my perspective, I thought it was a great show overall. Met a lot of new people, actually people that know us that I didn't know, but they know us, and got to see and talk to friends and colleagues that have been in the business for a while. So yeah, to your point, Jim, I concur. Patrick and his team did a really good job of organizing and keeping things moving, and I didn't notice any major glitches in the whole program. I wish I could have spent more time on the exhibit floor. We were a little bit constrained in that regard, but very good representation, I think, in the industry by the vendors and the providers, I think generally overall, people came away from the show with pretty positive feelings.
And the venue didn't hurt at all. It was down in New Orleans, and we all had our share of some very, very good food and good time. Lots of music. It was just the end of Jazz Fest, so it was New Orleans at its best. So we appreciate the venue. Nothing against Orlando, but if they want to keep it there, that's in New Orleans, that'd be fine with me.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're going to be in Atlanta next year, and I wonder if they're just hitting the major cities around the U.S. I think that would be a welcome relief from just going to the same place over and over again to move around the country and see some of the different places.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I lobbied Patrick Hart for Philadelphia, which is where I'm situated. So that would be great. I think the Northeast gets kind of a, and I told Patrick this, I think the Northeast kind of gets the short end of the stick when it comes to location of these events sometimes. And, here's the most populated part of the country. And we all have to get on the airplane and schlep someplace to travel to it. And it would be nice, Patrick, if you're listening. I'll put in one more plug for the Northeast. Baltimore, Philadelphia, Boston would all be possibilities. So there you go.
Yeah, it would be nice to be able to get on the train mm-hmm. and go instead of having to get on a plane.
Amen, said the lady from Baltimore area, Maryland.
Thanks for the wrap-up of the show. That was really comprehensive, you guys. In non-show news, the Office of the New York Attorney General, Letitia James, says that the nation's largest broadband companies funded a secret campaign to persuade the FCC to repeal its net neutrality rules in 2017. And her office has been doing a multi-year investigation of fake comments. And she find four companies involved with the generation of fake comments, a total of more than 4 million in penalties. And she said there's going to be more to come. So to recap, net neutrality prohibits broadband providers from blocking, slowing down, or charging companies to prioritize certain content on the internet. James says her investigation uncovered widespread fraud as well as abusive practices used to sway government policy. Her office became involved because one of the comments was from a man who had been dead 7 years. She says these people stole his identity and submitted that comment. So that got the New York office involved in this. So I read the report. She did not name the broadband companies. She just said they're the largest. She said they spent a total of more than $8 million on the campaign. And she said the campaign was run through a nonprofit funded by the broadband industry called Broadband for America. And she said many of the comments that were fake provided cover, and that's in quotes, for the FCC's repeal of net neutrality rules. What it was, they disguised the orchestrated paid campaign. They disguised it as a grassroots effort. And they just made up comments, even if people did submit something on the website. These guys apparently just enhanced it or changed it. So overall, her office found that over 18 million of the 22 million comments on net neutrality were fake. And this was brought to the chairman at the time, Ajit Pai, who his office did not investigate or address it. And the three companies that were held accountable were Lead Generators, Fluent, Reactive Media, and Opt Intelligence. And they are paying different amounts depending on how many fake comments they generated. To me, yeah, this is important, but there's always been spam comments in the FCC filings. Net neutrality generated a whole lot because that was a sort of a wildfire issue, but this has always been an issue that, the FCC can't distinguish between fake and real on the comments. You just kind of have to look at them and say, does this sound whacked or not? You know, in the old days before the internet, people used to send postcard comments that were exactly the same text from postcard to postcard. So, that was mass generated and probably fake. So this is a different way of doing that. And of course, the Democrats care about net neutrality because they'd like to, net neutrality, it was repealed under Pai. The Democrats would like to reinstate it, but, time is running out to accomplish any of these big controversial topics because there still isn't a third Democrat at the FCC. And even though supposedly the White House is close, and I'm using air quotes here, close to naming another nominee, the Hispanics have been lobbying to get a Hispanic person in there. Supposedly the top of the heap is Ana Gomez, from NTIA. And, it still takes time, even if they nominated someone, even if Biden nominated someone right now, that person would still have to get through Congress. Votes would have to be whipped. It would take months to get a new person through. we'd be lucky to see a new person by the end of the year. And that only leaves another year to accomplish any big things. So I don't know. It's a toss up whether this is really going to happen. All right. So I think we're done. Thank you for listening to Inside Towers Week in Review. And as a reminder, if you want a complete rundown of all the stories for the week, check out our Saturday edition. We will see you in a week.
Thank you for listening to Tower Talks. To subscribe to our podcast, our daily newsletter, or use our other industry resources, please visit InsideTowers.com. Until next time, you've been listening to Tower Talks from Inside Towers, the wireless infrastructure industry's podcast.